Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program. As part of our discussion of eating disorders and awareness around eating disorders, we have Beth Mayer, LICSW, in the studio with us. She is the executive director of META, the Multi-Service Eating Disorders Association. She's been working in the eating disorders field for 30 years and is nationally recognized for her clinical work with eating disorders. In addition, Beth specializes in addictions, sexual abuse, clinical depression, and dissociative disorders. Welcome, Beth Mayer.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
In the United States, 20 million women and 10 million men will suffer from a clinically significant eating disorder at some time in their life, including anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder, or EDNOS, which is eating disorder not otherwise specified. By age six, girls especially start to express concerns about their own weight or shape. 40 to 60% of elementary school girls aged 6 to 12 are concerned about their weight or becoming fat. This concern endures throughout life for many people. Those statistics are just so staggering.
They're shocking to me. And it's no surprise to us working in the field of substance use disorders that there is a correlation or often a crossing of these issues, right? And we heard from Bree and Bess earlier that they often go hand in hand, and EDs can be a form of addiction. I don't understand. I don't understand how this happens. So first of all, I want to begin to understand what types of eating disorders we're talking about. Could you break them down a little, Beth?
As you had noted, we see a lot of people with anorexia, bulimia, EDNOS, and binge eating disorder. But binge eating disorder is the largest eating disorder in the United States. And I think people don't realize that. That is binging uncontrollably without compensation, without purging. And so people, particularly people with binge eating disorder that end up living in larger bodies, have not only an eating disorder, but the shame-based issue of living in a larger body, which is, you know, very, very difficult in our society. Then with bulimia, people end up compensating. It can be over exercise or purging to get rid of the food. All of these eating disorders are very dangerous. And anorexia nervosa people tend to get more scared of it because they visually see it on people, but it actually is not as prominent as some of the other eating disorders. EDNOS, or what we call kind of the in-between eating disorders, a lot of people think those aren't as serious, but they actually can be very, very serious.
Why do people do it? You know, we hear about self-harm things,
yes,
and as a measure of control for somebody who feels out of control. Why would somebody do this to themselves?
I think that what we know in all the eating disorders is it actually physiologically calms us to starve ourselves, to binge. So there's a physiological response.
So it's self-soothing in some
yes,
ways?
Very self-soothing. And then you beat yourself up or you hate yourself. But in the moment when let's say I am a 14-year-old girl and my parents are getting divorced, and I decide that the best thing for me to do is to start eating clean and exercising, and I start losing weight, 35% of people who will diet and lose weight will end up having eating disorders, which is staggering. And so I start that process, and then what happens is everybody in school is coming up to me and saying, "Oh my God, you look great. You're wonderful." And also, that's all I'm thinking about all day is what I'm not going to eat. So I don't really have to manage the emotions around my parents divorcing, because not only does everybody think I look hot, but I also feel good at school. Everybody's paying attention to me and, you know.
So the reinforcement is
unbelievable.
Staggering. Yeah.
Unbelievable. In everybody, we were talking before about males and females. We are the ones in our society that have provided the impetus for eating disorders. I'm sorry to say, there are other cultures where it's not as bad as it is here, because we covet people that look a certain way. And why wouldn't that be the dream of any person to get to that goal?
So as Bree told us and Bess discussed, that there's almost like a fertile ground at a certain time in a young girl's life, where if it's the wrong kind of cue or the wrong type of social environment or all these things coming together, trauma, sexual abuse, things like that, this creates that fertile ground. Right. Why does it happen with some people and not others? Do we know?
Yeah, I think it has to do with what Bria talked about with attachment, sensitivity issues. A lot of the people I work with kind of came into the world being more sensitive to criticism, to comments from people. I mean, they're doing a lot of twin studies about people who are raised in the same environment. One gets an eating disorder, one does not. I need to also say that in my experience at Meta, I see tons of families that are amazing and supportive, and everybody has positive body image in the family, and kids still get eating disorders. So it's not, again, we live in a fertile ground in our society. It's not just that something difficult has happened to someone.
What are some of the myths around eating disorders that you see and you hear and that drive you nuts?
The myths that drive me nuts is that it's the affluent white female. We see so many people that are impoverished. At Meta, we have two older woman groups. Now, we hate calling them older woman groups, but they're women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s that have had eating disorders. This is an illness that many people can live in, again, because society accepts it and supports it in some ways. And so that people, you know, get praise for eating clean and they live their lives a lot of time under the radar with eating disorders and not getting treatment.
So the myth of that, you know, you look great, you can't have a problem.
Exactly.
What else?
I think that it doesn't affect boys and men. I think that it affects more boys and men than we know about. I think it's 10% at least. And men and boys are not getting services because it's not as acceptable. It's very shame-based. I think other cultures, again, that are not being touched upon because we're not going into the city. We're not having specialists in the inner city. So I think that it is rampant in different ways. I find that when I go and work in the inner city, a lot of people don't even know that they have binge eating disorder. And they're like, oh, that's just what I do. So I think that the more we get the word out, the more people will feel like they can in some ways come out of the closet to start acknowledging that this is horrifying in their lives.
So how do people get help and what kinds of things? I mean, if someone has a question, you know, about, you know, what's going on for them, what are the kinds of symptoms that people might have that they might need help? And then how would they get help?
So a couple of things that I think about in an initial question that I ask as a therapist is how many hours a day do you spend thinking about food or your body? And people usually laugh and they're like, all day. Like, that's what I think about. And whether they're actually taking action on that or not, that's a problem. All right. And having poor body image, not feeling strong in your body. I mean, there are so many signs. And at Meta, we do tons of assessments. So people can come in for a very low cost and come and get an assessment. And we'll let them know. We try to go out to many middle and high schools to do awareness, to let people know that they could be on their way and that there are things they can do to stop kind of the cycle.
Like what?
They can start trying to have role models that feel good about their bodies. One of the things that you had talked about before is being a parent, and many, many family members diet, feel bad about their bodies. And I'm sorry to say that gets passed on to your child. You know, I always think of those Weight Watchers meetings when you lose a pound and everybody's clapping. Like, that's on. I just got the People magazine and Oprah's talking about the last weight she's lost. And that's applauded, and it's not looked at in educating people about diets, that 95% of diets fail. So what happens is people start yo-yoing, and they, again, they get applauded for it. And rather than feeling strong and powerful in your body, you're feeling like your body is ornamental and that you have to do something about it.
Well, how do we encourage healthy body image in our children? What can we as family members or you know, parents, what can we do to encourage that? How can we talk about it with our kids?
I think the first thing, it's not even the talking, it's role modeling. It's eating with your children and learning to enjoy food and sitting. This is what families don't do anymore. The most important thing is having your family meals with your kids, right? Never teaching children to diet or to restrict what they're eating, to really know that all foods are acceptable. There are no good and bad foods. And again, most people say that's bad for you, right? Rather than everything in moderation. And that we have to learn to enjoy tasting our food and really figuring out how to slow things down. We had mentioned thinking about mindfulness. We don't eat mindfully anymore. We eat rushed. We don't feel our bodies. We don't understand what the food is doing to nourish our bodies. What are you in the mood for, right? What do you really want? I always say as a practitioner, if we could figure out, and I'm sure this is true in the addictions field, what do we really want? We wouldn't have addictions and eating disorders.
Right. That's a good point. when a young person comes to you or is referred to you, you know, we often have folks who are very resistant to treatment with us. Does that occur in the ED field?
Absolutely. And just like, I don't know how it happens all the time in the addiction field, but I say, I'm not going to try to take away this eating disorder for you. This is in some ways your lifeline. And actually, I know this sounds bizarre, but eating disorders sometimes can help people stay alive.
They're coping skills.
Exactly. Until they can find other coping mechanisms. So you don't want to pull it out unless they're in an intensive treatment without something to fall back on.
So I'm a 12-year-old girl and I come to you presenting with this,
yeah.
Where does the story start with you?
The story would start with me starting to help this child identify what purpose the eating disorder holds and how is this person really feeling and why is the eating disorder masking those emotions. So food and feelings go hand in hand. And, you know, I work with this young girl who, you know, nowadays everything looks so perfect, right? So we talked about perfectionism as part of having an eating disorder, but you go on Instagram and everybody else is having that wonderful time. Everybody else has that wonderful body and you can't achieve that. So there's more and more pressure to be perfect. And it's a false assumption. And so we really look at what is really happening. You know, when you really get to know that friend who looks so perfect, maybe their life isn't as perfect. But it's gotten harder and harder with social media. There's no question about it.
Is there understanding body dysmorphia and things, that kind of body image issue? If you suffer from that, are you automatically prone to an eating disorder?
No. No, body dysmorphic disorder is a separate disorder. And so they, again, a lot of the studies will not even take somebody for body dysmorphic disorder that has an eating disorder. So they are separate, but they can go hand in hand at different points in somebody's life.
If somebody needs help with this or a family member is alarmed by this showing up in one of their children, what do they do? How do they get help?
I mean, I would love them for them to call Meta. I mean, we spend hours and hours on the phone, free of charge to family members that are concerned about their kids. I would love for families to call us before it gets to the point that somebody's symptomatic.
How do they get in touch with you?
They call 617-558-1881, or they go to our website, which is www.metainc.org.
And what resources in Massachusetts are available for folks.
Okay, so there are many, many different treatment programs that Meta knows about, basically in Massachusetts, but all over the country. And then what we do is we have about 150 to 200 providers that we connect with that all specialize in eating disorders. So we're really a conduit for getting people treatment and the support they need. So we work with nutritionists, doctors, psychiatrists, therapists, yoga therapists, and anybody that's going. We put a package together for a person. We also run groups. Meta believes in full recovery. So what we do in our groups, which is very different than many other programs, is we actually have people, clinicians who run our groups, and then we have people who are fully recovered as our co-leaders, because we really want to promote that people can fully recover. The founder of Meta is fully recovered. I'm fully recovered myself and some of my staff. So we really promote and serve as a role model in the community that you don't have to suffer for a long period of time.
How is recovery measured in with eating disorders?
So that is the most complicated question ever.
You're welcome.
What we say, it's very different than the addiction field, because you have to build a healthy relationship with food in your body to what we call fully recover. And what I always say is, I don't want to fully recover to what my neighbor is feeling, which she's still hoping to lose those extra 10 pounds. So full recovery is being comfortable that the eating disorder is not making any of the choices you have for the day, the eating thoughts or the body image thoughts. So I wake up every day not thinking about what I eat, not worrying about whether I've moved my body or not. I move my body when I feel the need and it feels good. I eat what I want and I'm satisfied with whatever my body ends up being. So I think that part of it is, where does your body land? And that is what the world is not comfortable with, is we want to land where our bodies don't want to be. And so we're always fighting with that. You know, and most people do fight with those last 10 pounds, those last 20 pounds. If I could do this, then I would be happy.
I would be fixed.
Exactly.
Now, somebody could be listening to this and say, well, you're just encouraging people to, you know, gain weight and be lazy. How do you answer that?
I believe that we can live a balanced life. I am hoping that people, that food and body is just one aspect of the lives that people live, that we look towards meditation, to having a fulfilling career, you know, that it's looking at the package, not just looking at food and body. And many people focus their energies onto just what their body should look like for full happiness. And that's just not it. I believe people should be healthy and happy.
Beth Mayer is the executive director of Meta, the Multi-Service Eating Disorders Association. She's been working in the field for 30 years, and she specializes also in addiction, sexual abuse, clinical depression, and dissociative disorders. Meta is here to help. Beth Mayer, thank you so much
for being here,
and we look forward to catching up with you in the future.
And I'll be at both of the films, so come say hi.
We'll look forward to it. So Bess O'Brien's film, All of Me, is going to be screening on February 12th, that's a Sunday, at the West Newton Cinema, 1296 Washington Street in West Newton. The movie starts at 6, there's a 5:30 check-in. You can also go to a screening on Monday, February 13th in Worcester, at Assumption College, Kennedy Hall, which is 500 Salisbury Street. The movie starts at 7 o'clock. There's a 6:30 check-in. The movie is presented by Meta and Walden Behavioral Health Eating Disorders Treatment. There's a $5 suggested donation at the door. Students attend free. You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.